For the first time in 10 years, Georgia's State Board of Pardons and Paroles has approved new guidelines for determining when inmates leave prison. One change uses the number of arrests on a person's record, not just number of convictions, in order to determine parole decisions. Adam Gelb is director of the Public Safety Performance Project with the Pew Charitable Trusts. Welcome back. It's been a while.
Thanks. Good to see you, Celeste.
And joining us is also as well as Marissa McCall Dodson. She's the Public Policy Director with the Southern Center for Human Rights. Hi, Marissa.
Good morning, Celeste.
So, Adam, first, can you lay out exactly what these changes are? Because it looks like the largest number of changes is in what's called this guideline system.
Sure. So the big context here, Celeste, is that Georgia, for about 6 years now, under the leadership of Governor Deal, has been reforming its criminal justice system, the juvenile justice system as well. And year after year, the state has come forward with a set of reforms that are designed to make sure that prisons are holding people who are truly serious, chronic, and violent offenders, and to take lower level offenders and move them into alternatives that work better and cost less. And year after year, they've passed legislation and done things in order to accomplish that goal. The parole guidelines are very much in line with that overall thrust. They are trying to say, hey, we want to make sure that as a parole board, we are following what the governor is doing, what the legislature is saying, and use data as best we can to decide and help us to decide who should be behind the walls and who should be a good candidate for supervision on parole. So the key question here, and this is really the crux of this, is compared to what?
Right.
Right? So if you have decisions that are on one day being made based on your gut, and you have parole boards sitting around with huge stacks of case files, and if you've ever been to the Georgia Parole Board, you will see giant stacks of files on every flat surface in that office. And these parole board members are charged with reading through these. And there'll be statements from witnesses, and there'll be police reports and all this information. Without guidelines, then each parole board member can bring to that whatever their gut feels. They can say,
right.
I don't like shoplifters. You know, my brother runs a small store, and I really want to stick it to shoplifters. And another person might not feel that way. And you can have really chaos.
Or more dangerously, I don't like Muslims. I don't like Catholics, whatever
any
biases
of those,
you can bring.
That's right. Any of those biases could creep in, and you would never know about it. What the guidelines do is try to say, here's some common criteria based on offense and based on your prior record. What should that sentence actually look like? The guidelines then don't determine what the sentence is. They just make a suggestion. And then the parole board members are still free to use their own judgment and adjust what those guidelines recommend.
Okay, so here is, before we get to you, to Marissa, to respond to that, here's Chris Barnett, who echoes what Adam just said. Chris Barnett is the executive director of the state's Board of Pardons and Parole, and he says that they actually came up with these guidelines after reviewing data collected by Applied Research Services.
We provided them the data on approximately 26,000 Georgia parolees. They ran a multitude of variables through and came up with those that are most scientifically significant to determining the risk of negative behavior or parole revocations in the future. One of those is the move from convictions to arrest.
So, Marissa, it sounds as though the intent, at least, was to make it more fair. Does this accomplish that?
No, not at all. So I think one of the concerns here is allegations don't equal guilt, right? And so suggesting that because someone was arrested or charged with a crime, that should negatively impact their ability to be considered for parole seems unfair. It flies in the face of our presumption of innocence, right? So to move the needle from considering charges for which someone was convicted to whether or not they were arrested or charged with the crime as an indicator of what kind of parole eligibility they should have is unfair.
I assume you one of the reasons you mentioned this is because it's well documented that African Americans and Latinos, for example, are much more likely to be arrested for offenses that whites, on the other hand, often don't end up getting arrested for.
That's right. There's been a lot of research lately. The USA Today issued a report recently about disparities in light of the Ferguson report and finding that African Americans are at least three times more likely across the country to be arrested than their white counterparts. African Americans are also more likely to be convicted, also more likely to be given a prison sentence versus a probated sentence or the like. And so the point is there racial disparity in our system anyway? Yes. do these kinds of tools that the parole board would use, do they bear out the same disparity? Albeit if you suggest what is the likelihood of being arrested, are they right to suggest that Black people are more likely to be arrested? Yes. But is that a reason, if you will, to decide that because they're more likely to be arrested, we shouldn't let
right,
them out of
prison? Maybe it doesn't get to the reason why Black people are more likely to be arrested. Let's hear again, Adam, before we go back to you, from Chris Barnett, again, executive director of the state's Board of Pardon and Paroles. And we asked him whether including arrest was unfair.
One arrest will not move you from a low to a medium or a medium to a high. So you are talking about a number of arrests that would move you from one level to the next. And the board is concerned with the risk of rearrest within 3 years of release.
Let's actually hear one more comment from Chris Barnett before we moved on, dealing with exactly this in terms of whether or not this will unfairly target African Americans.
We actually went back to our partners at Applied Research Services with that concern. They ran the science and the numbers, and they found that statistically insignificant difference between racial profiles, less than 1% difference between white and non-white.
Marissa?
I just wanted to quickly say one of the bigger changes here is not only are they focusing on arrests instead of convictions, but they're also looking at the number of misdemeanor arrests for the first time. So we're talking about lower level offenses being now considered for the first time to determine parole eligibility. And
so, Adam, this is just one change in some of the reforms that came through for this. So in the bottom sum total, is this more fair or less fair?
The projection was that by now Georgia would have about 60,000 people in prison. That number,
which is a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot of people. It's one of the highest incarceration rates, imprisonment rates in the nation. That has fallen because of these reforms down to about 52,000 inmates. It's a huge difference. Some other states, South Carolina, Texas, Mississippi, have actually had steeper drops in their population, but it is truly amazing what is going on in states across the country, and particularly states in the South, where leadership is saying, we tried to build our way out of this problem and lock up everybody for as long as possible, and that was going to be our response to crime. And there's a much more reasoned and evidence and science-based approach that's happening now. And so this is very much a part of and in line with that. The folks that the parole board worked with on this new guidelines are some of the most thoughtful, serious people in the business.
You're talking about Applied Research Services?
I am. Their offices happen to be right down the street
Atlanta,
here from your studios here. And I think it's two things. One, absolutely the case that there is discrimination in the criminal justice system. And two, a legitimate concern that when you put in place guidelines that this like this, there's a chance that you might bake in some of that discrimination that is occurring in other parts of the system. And that's why you would have the parole board go to ARS and say, run the numbers here and see how this actually works. And what we're hearing from the parole board is that when they ran the numbers, the concern was not borne out, that moving from convictions to arrests did not exacerbate any racial disparity. In fact, it had no impact at all. And here's the key again, compared to what? Either you have a tool that is going to standardize these things across these parole board members and make it fairer across the offenders who are up for parole, or you're going to have individual members of that parole board making whatever individual judgments they want.
Okay,
some might consider,
but compared to what? I mean, using these new guidelines, will more African Americans actually be granted parole than they were under the old system? Do we know?
So that what the numbers are showing is that would not be the case. There would be no
difference.
No, and in fact, what they're trying to do is continue to shrink the number of people going into prison and to shrink the prison population, at least of those who are at a lower risk to public safety. And in fact, Celeste, over the past 7 years now, the rate of commitment of African Americans to prisons in Georgia is down well into the 30%.
Okay.
The question is not whether they will get out, but how long will they have to serve? And so when they get this score, right, the point is that African Americans are more likely to be on the higher risk score in terms of scoring, and so serving a longer sentence before they're eligible for parole. And I just want to say really quickly that it seems unfair to use the likelihood of arrest as an indicator when the state uses conviction and return to prison as the definition of recidivism. So either recidivism is, and I realize that the definition can vary across the country, but either Georgia is going
recidivism
to—
means your chance of reoffending.
Reoffending. And what does reoffending mean? Reoffending, as I would argue, is a conviction, right? Actually being found guilty of another crime. So I believe that's at least the way Georgia defines it.
It is.
And or return to prison. So either we're going to suggest that we only decide that someone has recidivated if they return to prison or if they've actually been arrested. And if our recidivism rate is based on likelihood of arrest, then Georgia would not be able to hold itself out as having a lower recidivism rate in light of what's happening if we're going to look at arrests instead.
It's fair enough. That is Marissa McCall Dodson of the Southern Center for Human Rights. And we also spoke with Adam Gelb of the Pew Charitable Trusts. Thanks so much to both of you.
Happy to be here.